Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome once again. We're about to talk to actor, Baltimorean, Josh Charles, who joins us here for a little bit right now. He's, of course, you know him from The Good Wife. You know him from In Treatment. You know him from his Emmy nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series last year, and more. And Josh, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
So, Josh, one of the things that I was thinking about was, you are a Baltimorean. You grew up here, and you really, as everybody doesn't, but you've maintained a connection to this town and a love for it that others haven't, whether it's the Orioles or the Ravens or just the place itself.
Mm-hmm. I do. You know, it's odd because I don't, you know, hearing you talk about it like that, I feel like it's actually something that's that happens to a lot of people from Baltimore who move away. You know, there, at least that's been my experience, and the people that I connect with, either in the business or just randomly sort of in New York or Los Angeles, that there is this quality of people that hail from Baltimore that have you know, that you never quite lose that connection. Or at least I have, and I've found that in people I've interacted with. I mean, it's where I'm from. A city that I'm very fond of, warts and all, you know, that I love deeply, and you know, and love to explain to people about it, and maybe open their eyes more about it when sometimes you know, they may just view it as The Wire and nothing else,
right,
you know,
right,
and
right.
And that's not to disrespect that show, because I actually really think it's a brilliant show and opened up a lot of eyes to issues politically and that I think people need to see about our city. But I also I think the city's grown so much, certainly since I've left, and it's a place that I love to visit. I love to get back as often as I can. Go down to the Eastern Shore quite a bit in the summers, and you know, I'm very fond of it. I love it.
One of the things I've always thought about you over the years is that you've had this independent spirit, feeling like you could do it. Well, I mean, you were a student of the School for the Arts, but you, I remember you were a student of the School for the Arts, you were going to do something there, but you were in New York actually auditioning and working on something else. You always had this, I remember that day very well.
I know, we had a lot of talks about it.
And so, but I mean, that was just part of it. Was in you innately to be an actor, something that you feel from the gut, and you really went after it in a way that most people don't these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I knew. I did. I knew very early on that I wanted to be a performer. I started, you know, my parents were taking me to comedy clubs, and my friend Dan Rosen used to run
Dan
a comedy
Rosen.
Club. Yeah, and he used to run it. And Dan's now living in Los Angeles and is a writer director, and we remain in contact. But I used to go watch the comedians at his Charm City Comedy Club, and then when he moved it, I started doing the open mic nights when I was 10, and through that, I ended up going to a theater camp in upstate New York called Stage Door Manor Performing Arts Training Center, where oddly enough, you know, most of my best friends from today are from that.
Huh.
From that camp, and certainly if not from that camp, are people that I know, you know, through people from that camp. So it actually, going to that place had a really profound effect on me, and just connected me with other kids my age who were also really passionate about the theater. So for whatever reason, I knew at a very early age that's what I wanted to do. And there's oftentimes, you know, I look back and, you know, I wish that I didn't always know so soon, because, you know, there's a part of me that would have liked to have gone to, let's say, a conservatory, or, you know, a program such as Juilliard or Yale, and really get those 3 years. But you know what? That wasn't the path that was laid out for me. Just I knew really clearly what I wanted, and there really wasn't any denying it at that time. So, you know, it's been a sort of an experience of learning a lot on the job. I mean, the good thing about being an actor is you can continue to grow and get better. With the more experience you have, both professionally and just life experience. So, you know, I've tried to take that with me and be humble about it, but it's certainly, you know, it's certainly that there are times where, you know, I have some regret of wishing I may have chose a different path, but it is the path I have.
The path has been fine. I mean, the path has done you well.
It's all right.
And yeah,
all right.
You've done all right. And you've studied with some good people in L.A. and New York in the process of learning how to be an actor.
Yes, I have. I've had some great teachers along the way that, you know, and some that I still work with that's in coaching capacity, you know, before I do a job or something. I don't always really have the luxury, I mean, to do it in television, you know, as I know you know. It's just the nature of the beast in TV is, you know, we start, you know, it's such a fast-moving train. And for instance, like right now we're filming the second to last episode of this third season. And we finish it on tomorrow. And we haven't gotten the script yet for the final episode, which we begin on Monday. Now, we may get that script tomorrow night. We may get it Saturday. You know, sometimes we could get it Sunday, but usually we'll get it at least 48 hours in advance. But quite often you'll get that new script in the middle of a work week while you're still filming the episode before. So you're working during the day and then sort of learning your lines, you know, in the evening for the episode that starts the following day or the day after. So it's an ongoing cycle of that for, you know, a little over 9 months. And luckily, this show is filled with fantastic writing and great crew and cast and people that I enjoy working with. But it doesn't allow you the sort of prep time and the process that most actors would prefer, myself included, to have to really to just sort of sit with something, to read it again and again and sit with it and think about it and, you know, dream of it and make notes. And work with a coach or someone that you want to talk to about it and bounce off and run the scene. You don't really always have that luxury in television. So that's one of the downsides of it. But the positive side is you really get to arc the character over a long period of time. And you get to really, you don't usually get to do that.
Yeah, that's the part I think that always intrigues me about doing a series, a network series, as you've done. Which is being able to find the character and work with the character for this long period of time, whether it's just what you did in Treatment or Sports Night or with this series, Good Wife. I mean, you might not have a chance to kind of play with it the way you want to in theater or in a film, but you get a chance to work it, and which is a different approach to a character.
It is. It's a different approach, and it's also just working a different muscle. It's like the thing when I explain to certain people that haven't done TV, either friends of mine or directors or actors, and how the process works, you know, some of them are really scared by the idea of just how quick it moves. And you know, and I understand that because in many ways it's not ideal. You know, you want to have that time to prepare. But the thing that I like about it, you know, aside from just the quality of the writing and the character and how they've been writing the show, is I love the structure of it, you know, in some ways. I love, you know, growing up as an actor, you know, you don't, and doing mainly films and theater, you don't always have structure. You don't know when you're working, when you're not working. And so the ability to have some structure in your life is, for me on a personal level, is very beneficial. You know, it helps keep my psyche in check. And secondly, I love the sort of workmanlike quality to it. So while you don't always have the time to prepare that you would like, there can be a positive aspect to that, which is that you don't, you know, you have to take a real sort of put on your hard hat workmanlike approach to it. And I like that, you know, it's really, you know, your focus has to be very clearly about what the scene's about at hand. You don't have all the time to sit there and think about it. So sometimes that forces you to work a different instinctual muscle. And that can make you, you know, that can really help you, you know, when you go to do the other projects where you do have more time to think about.
How's that compare to working on stage, let's say in a run of 10 shows, 20 shows, 30 shows you might do in character?
Mm-hmm.
Is it different?
It's completely, I mean, theater is really, I mean, obviously the theater, you know, all good work comes from the writing. The writing is the original engine, but certainly theater, one would say, is more of an actor's medium. I mean, you're there, you're living and breathing it every night. And once you sort of lock a performance, you know, through the rehearsal process, you're seeing it all the way through, and you're still learning things, you know, 3 months into a run, and that's humbling. You know, I mean, I remember finishing a play once and realizing that God, I was still learning things. you know, in the last weekend after doing it so many times. And that just made me feel kind of shameful about some of my film and television work, about the level of that you can never have enough just sort of process of preparing and working on something and learning and digging and digging. But I think that the real difference is, you know, to me, I feel like it breaks down, and at least my view of it, I mean, it's just my opinion, but, you know, like I said, theater is sort of more actor's medium. Television certainly is a writer's medium. You know, the writers create the shows. They are the executive producers. They finish the shows, usually, and cut them, sometimes direct them. So it really is their world. And I think, you know, filmmaking is a director's medium, you know, where the director is sort of the head, overseeing everything, sort of his vision, her vision, putting it together and putting all the final touches together. So, I mean, personally, I love to do plays. I love to do movies. I love to tell. I love to do it all. It's fun. The good thing about being an actor in these days, it's sort of a two-parter, because the bad thing is, I think the business has shrunk in some ways, you know, and
shrunk
in many ways. Well, it's shrunk in many ways. I mean, it's just the economics of the business. Look at the movies that are being made. Most movies are crap.
Right.
I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, sorry.
You know,
it's
true.
Most of them are crap. Some of the best writing's coming out of television right now. Look at all the film people that are doing television work these days. The reason for that is that there's A, less work, and B, the writing is so good in television. I know I'm sort of being redundant that I keep saying that, but it needs to be said. I mean, you know, you watch, you know, the whole shift that's been happening. It's been happening for some time. And you have also, you know, people in theater now working in television and film. So these walls and these lines, rather, that used to be very clearly defined. If, well, this person, you know, when I was really young, starting out as an actor, you know, it was like, okay, you're a television actor, or you do TV, rather, or you do film, or you do theater, and some people cross over, but most don't. Well, those lines are all blurred now, you know, and everybody's doing everything. So while I think in some ways the business of it and the economics has forced sort of film industry and others to sort of shrink a little bit and to make it more star-driven, to the haves and the have-nots, and that's harder for sort of workmen-like actors to sort of make a living, because they just want to pay the stars and not the other people. I think that sort of that gets balanced a little bit by the fact that now there are more avenues for actors to work. That you're not just sort of pigeonholed into one particular type of acting, which is good for actors, because actors are actors and they like to do everything, you know, or most of us do, I would say. So I think that's a positive aspect.
I think what you just said that is really very critical to where the future of acting and all of this comes to, because I think in some ways, let's see what you think. I mean, do you think that this might lead to a kind of a, where do you think it might lead to in this century, in terms of where film and TV and theater will take us, given what you've just described? Where do you think it's going to go?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I remember people talking for a while ago, you know, when it looked like, you know, DVDs were sort of driving the film industry, and that seemed to have dried up. And so now it's sort of the, you know, the new media world. That's a world that, you know, we don't fully know where it's going and how they're going to make profits off of it specifically in every avenue. But, you know, just as that was happening, I had people that were sort of in the business aspect of the entertainment world telling me, well, you know, as soon as that's gone, you know, the new thing is just going to be directly beaming these movies into people's homes.
Right.
And then I guess if you follow that further, you wonder, you know, well, what will happen to actually just the process of going to the theater, you know? I mean, the movie theaters I'm talking about now. And so, I don't know. I mean, you know, you got to think, a lot of times when you go to movies, at least in my experience, you know, it's people talking, they're checking their cell phones, you know, it has to be something that I really want to go and sit in that theater with, because I love that process of going into a dark theater with strangers and just sitting and watching something that I don't know about. But quite often we'll watch stuff here, you know, with the advent of you know, plasma and now LED televisions,
yeah,
or LCD,
right.
Whatever the heck they're called, you know, that people have these surround sounds of these cinemas in their homes, so that the process has become so much better and nicer of watching, you know, these things at home if you have a good setup. But I also think, you know, I think the theater will never die, because that's such a live experience, you know, and that part that each night you just don't quite know, you know, that that something new may be discovered and that you're there with the actors sitting watching. You know, I just saw Death of a Salesman.
Oh, how was that?
Last week. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And seen the production a few times, but I thought the work in this was so specific and had a sort of quiet intensity about it that it forced you to have to kind of lean in, you know,
mm-hmm.
and pay, you know, not no pun intended, but that, you know, attention really must be paid, that it forced
right.
you to kind of lean in and watch and it, and as it sort of sucked you in. And I really felt more than in other times that I've seen it, you know, the love between the characters, specifically between the father and the sons, so detailed and so specifically and intensely. It was a very, very beautiful production. It uses the original sets and the original music, and the performances I just thought were wonderful. So, yeah, that was a really inspiring thing to see. And, you know, that'll never change. So I'm not worried really about the theater. It's more about, like, what happens with films and going to see movies. But I don't know. You know, I'm not really an expert to talk on that. It's just really my opinion.
So.
But what do I know?
It was good. I thought it was good analysis, man. I thought it was good analysis. It was good analysis.
Thank you.
You know, I was thinking about this trajectory of what you've also had. I remember that when you began, you've been really lucky. Luck is only part of it, but in terms of you've been getting a lot of work from the beginning, since the late 80s to now. You seem to constantly have gotten roles. I remember one thing, I haven't thought about this particular thing you did in a long time. Everybody knows you did Dead Poets Society, and that was wonderful, and you had a chance to act with some incredible people, like Robin Williams. But you also did, shortly after that, I really remember, because we were all gathered on the TV set to watch it, when you had the role of Andrew Goodman in Murder in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just watching this kind of actor kind of come alive in these different places that you did. And do you ever harken back to those early roles, just to play with them in your head, or are they just gone?
I mean, sometimes, but, you know, I mean, look, there's a quality that, I mean, I've been in this business since I'm 15 years old.
Right,
you know?
right.
And now, I mean, I just turned 40 this last year, and you get through so many ups and downs as an actor, and I think literally when they give you, you know, your SAG card, you know, they should also give you like a, you know, whenever you're lucky enough to get that, they should just also give you like a self-doubt manifesto, you know, just like, you know, or at least how to deal with it, how to deal with self-doubt. It sort of comes with the territory. So while in many ways, if I step back in moments when I'm not sort of plagued with intense self-doubt and can look and say, well, you know, hey, this has been a successful run and there's ups and downs. I think that's really the difference. Is if you ask me if I look back on stuff, sure. I mean, you know, at the time, you know, you're 18 or 17, you do a movie like Dead Poets, and then some opportunities come to you. You know, I turned a lot of stuff down because I wanted to hold out for another special thing, you know, and sometimes those things don't come. And so you sort of go into the avenues that you want, you know, and you make choices at that time that feel right. And some of them were more right. You know, I was happy to be a part of Murder, Mississippi for no other reason than it just helped me as an actor to work with people like Tom Hulse and also, you know, get to meet Andrew's mother and talk to her and realize like the power of the responsibility, you know, of taking on someone that actually lived and existed and trying to make my version of him as authentic as possible. I remember feeling that was very humbling, you know, and I felt a tremendous sense of responsibility in that. So, but, you know, look, I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, I also did Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead at that time, you know,
right,
when I
right,
was 18.
Right.
And look, you know, if I walk down the street today, you know, half the, or I'd say more, 90% of the 22-year-olds, that would be the only reason they knew me, not because of a good wife or any of the other work I've done in the last, you know, 20-some-odd years. It's really more about that. So that always gives me a chuckle and makes me laugh, you know. I mean, it used to probably upset me more, but now I just laugh at it because it's a long process, you know. I think that's the thing that I've learned the most through the journey is just realizing how to deal with the times when you're not working. You know, when you are working, I think it's much easier. You feel like you have a sense of purpose and a sense of focus. And it's not always that case. So I think the important thing is to try to make those other times and fill them with other things that give you a sense of purpose so that you're not relying on it from the outside. And that can be, I guess that's true not just for what I do, but for anybody, you know, just a sense of not feeling like, you know, the outside force is going to be the one that's going to tell me whether I'm good, be that a job, be that a review, be that anything, you know, that it has to come from inside. Because, you know, I've got enough good reviews to know that they don't last. You know, the ones that sort of stick with you in an odd way are the ones that, you know, are bad.
That you don't like.
You know, which I always find really fascinating. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter if someone raves about you. It's that one person that didn't like you that you'll think about for years on end.
Right, exactly.
But
you were talking earlier before we went on the air, you're about to do a film in, after the season's over, a film in France after you finish filming this last season of Good Wife. Can you talk about who are you working with?
I'm working with this really brilliant filmmaker named Pascal Ferran, and she's super talented. Her last film was an adaptation of Lady Chatterley back in 2007 that won all the French César, which is the French Oscar, I guess, for Best Picture and everything. And she's a really, you know, she's an auteur. I mean, she's an absolutely brilliant filmmaker. And the film is fascinating. Don't even ask me to describe it because it's it might be hard to do in a short period of time. But it is something I'm excited to do because she was just here in New York for about 3 days, and we rehearsed with an interpreter because she doesn't speak much English.
Oh,
I don't
really
speak much French. Yes, I don't speak much French, so I have to speak a little French in the film, but it doesn't have to be fluent. So I have to work on that, and I have been studying Italian the last year and a half because it's been a real passion of mine of trying to learn the Italian language. So when I was doing the scenes where I have to speak in my broken French, her and the interpreter were sort of gently ribbing me that I was sounding a little Italian in my French, so which I thought was, I was one part ashamed and one part proud of that, you know, because I've been working really hard. So, but it's, you know, it's a journey that I'm excited to go on because just to work with someone of her stature and her talent. And I advise, you know, anybody listening to check out her film, you know, check out Lady Chatterley on Netflix.
Well, Lady Chatterley is an amazing movie. She's an amazing filmmaker.
Yes, yeah, she's great. And the film is, you know, it's called Bird People. And I play an American, but it sort of follows these two parallel stories. And I'm shooting it in Paris, you know, this spring. So,
well, that's wonderful.
You know, there could be worse places to be.
Yeah, right.
but more importantly, I'm just looking forward to the opportunity. It's been a while since I've done a film that actually that I'm passionate about and care about. So that's exciting for me.
No, that's good. She's done some wonderful work. I my French is terrible, though. My wife's French is amazing. This one, Mange de Soupe, I think was another one she made that was just amazing. She's done some incredible work. She's a really
her first film was called Making Arrangements with the Dead, or at least it was one of her first films that won the Camera d'Or about 15 years ago in France. And she actually just sent me her second film that I'm gonna watch right now. But she's just, you know, what I was talking about earlier about the everything that you don't have in prep time as far as in the television world. You know, here it's like we're sitting there and we're going through every beat of the script and the backstory of the character, and, you know, actually going there after rehearsal one day and sort of shopping for like aftershave that would be the right aftershave for the character. So it's a nice change of pace for me right now, and actually a fascinating process to work with someone whose native language is not your own, because having the interpreter there makes you realize that. You know, first of all, how hard it is to be an interpreter. But second of all, like, that you have to really think about your words more clearly of what you're trying to say. And I found that actually kind of really to be positive. You know, you have to think for a moment because, you know, this is going to be interpreted and you really want it to be clear. And that was helpful. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I can't wait. That's phenomenal. You're very lucky to have a chance to work with her. That's great. I mean, the body of people you've had a chance to work with is almost an actor's dream in many ways. Just think of the body of folks that you've actually had to stand on stage with or stand in front of a camera.
Yeah, it's true. I do. I feel very lucky. You know, I've gotten to work with some great directors in theater, and work with some amazing writers and talented people in television. I think television's really afforded me the opportunity to work the most in my career, at least the most effectively, at least, you know, in the film and television world. But in the theater, I've worked with some great people. I feel very blessed. So, you know, I'd love to get back into a play. There was an opportunity to do one this hiatus, but it just wasn't the right one. So hopefully, you know, maybe next hiatus, because it's been a while. I did a revival of The Glass Menagerie right before we began The Good Wife, in between when the pilot was made and when the show was picked up. Mm-hmm. And that was the last play I've done. So that, you know, it's been a little while now, and it's one of the things that, I don't know, someone told me that there was an actress that said, you know, being in a network television show is like golden handcuffs, you know, because you have this great opportunity and structure, and it allows you to work, you know, continuously, but then you don't necessarily have all the time that you have to do some play that some of my friends in the sort of cable world, let's say, you know, have, because they make, you know, 10 to 13 a year, and so they have that 4, 5, 6 months off to do a film, a play, whereas we work, you know, a longer schedule, 22, 23 episodes, you know, a little over 9 months. We finish April 6th, and we're going back to work the end of June. So,
wow.
You know, April, May, June. I mean, you know, and then we were starting back a little sooner this year. So it's a quicker break. And one that we definitely all need, but you know, that's the nature of the network schedule. So
when you're coming to Bmore again to help host the American Visionary Arts Museum Gala on the 31st, or is that the 30th? 31st.
Yes.
Yes.
I am. I'm very excited about that. My girlfriend Sophie Flack and I are going to be hosting the Ooh La La Gala event the 31st, as she said, and I love that museum. I love Rebecca. I love what she's done with it, and I'm really happy. I was thrilled and touched that she asked us to host this event, and because it's a place that, you know, in some ways, you know, Sophie and I were just talking about the other night about like what it is about it, and Sophie said, you know, there's this quality that because the artists are self-taught, when you see their work on the walls or wherever they're presented, that you're actually more curious about their life story because you know that they're self-taught and what their story was before or after. And I thought that was really interesting. You know, I love the place. I think it's so special. It's so unique. It's so uniquely Baltimore, you know, to me, to have that museum there. Whenever people ask me, be it on Twitter or just in passing, hey, I'm going to Baltimore for the weekend, or, you know, anything that you do, you know, it's always one of the places I say they must see. Because it's a really unique experience. I think it's brilliantly curated, and really proud to be a part of it and to help them sort of just, help them just keep doing what they're doing.
I look forward to seeing you there when you're here. It's going to be a great night, and Rebecca is an amazing human being. She's just very amazing. And Josh, I just want to say, brother, that just talking to you here for this interview today, that you have grown into a remarkable man, an actor, and a mensch, and it's good to talk to you.
You as well, Mark. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com.